Hello and welcome again to the Wide World of Wargaming Age of Sigmar podcast. As always, I am your host, Alex Gonzalez, and with me are John, Jeremy, and Garrett. John, what's on your workbench?
Oh, not too much today, Alex. You know, I had just had a great week, great weekend. Took the wife to go see Seal in concert over the weekend. got a couple great games in, played some 40K with my buddy Sean, and then got in a great practice game of 40 or AOS against Josh Harvey with his Eidneth Deepkin. And I tell you what, that was another practice game for that tournament they had up at Great Escape Games up in Sacramento. You remember last week I played against Michael Burke, and I did win the game, and both of those guys went and played at that tournament at Great Escape. And wouldn't you know, Michael took second place and Josh took third place. So there it is for you folks. Practice makes perfect. And I tell you, myself, you know, tonight we were talking earlier, and I was looking forward to my good friend Jeremy. He has a little something to tell us about this tournament this weekend. And in kind of celebration of that, I decided to break out something that I don't drink too often. And that is my Calavera Vert, which is a nice bottle of imported absinthe that I have. It's 89.9%, 188 proof. So if you hear me coughing and wheezing later on in the podcast, you know I took a sip in the background. So don't get too worried about me there. So Jeremy, now that I'm all prepped, tell me, what have you been up to?
Well, firstly, I want to say you better be pouring that over a sugar cube, because that's the only proper way to drink that stuff.
Done second, right.
Okay. All right. No, I was up this weekend. I got my, I went to Terra Crux, Quest for Terra Crux in Tacoma for RTT with our lead host, Alex. And then the day after that, I got my first tattoo. I will say it has been a kind of a very eventful weekend for me between joy and pain, effectively.
You get used to it.
And for those who, of us who are not just AOS nerds, my tattoo is a Salter rune from the Harlequin 40K army. It is my favorite 40K army, and I plan on getting eventually a full sleeve of them. So I'm looking forward to that. That was kind of a, I'm going to go into more details about Terra Crux, but you know, unless you really want to hear me go into details about how the tattoo got done and the excruciating tense moments where my lovely tattoo artist is trying to hold a conversation with me, and I'm just trying to focus on not like basically forgetting that like there's like needles piercing my skin at the exact same moment and trying to answer her questions. But anyway, Garrett, how do you what's on your workbench today?
Well, other than the pile of skeletons that I have to paint for the remnants of my death army, I have it's a dusty workbench. I am tired. I just got back from a wedding in Santa Cruz, California, and I just got back into Washington, D.C., so I'm a little tired, so my workbench is just sitting off to the side. I had a great weekend. Got to see a friend get married. Had fun. Got to go to my hometown, Santa Cruz. Drive around in my favorite car in the world, my dad's 65 Morris Mini.
Oh, damn. So,
yeah, no, it's a great car. It's imported from England, so it's right-hand side drive. And it's been in my family since 1970. So my dad learned how to drive in that car.
Amazing.
But it is such a joy to drive. It is like smaller than like your eye level is at most cars, like top of their like fender level. So you're like even like Malibus and like Honda Civics, you're shorter than their trunks. So you're just cruising around the road. It's a great car just towed around into Santa Cruz. I got to really enjoy Santa Cruz itself, actually. I feel like I really took it for granted when I lived there. I got to really like see the beaches, and it's been a while since I've been there. So that was quite nice this weekend. And then went to a beautiful wedding up in Roaring Camp up in the Redwoods. So that was quite nice. But other than that, I just drinking a glass of cranberry juice before going to bed tonight. And yeah, that's me. Hey, Alex, how are you doing?
Oh man, I'm doing well. I don't have much on my workbench. I literally just have an iced coffee and my dinner tonight, which is a green smoothie, just because I didn't have time. But I have a lot on my workbench. I am finishing up a conversion for a Horror Ghast, Endless Spell. You know, I just happened to pick up from a Frontline Gaming auction. I think at 2 Broadside Bashes ago, a Nagash through an auction, and it was not the best shape. And then they found out later that it was broken. So Pablo actually emailed me like 2 weeks after the event saying, hey, we're going to send this out to you, but it's actually broken. So we're going to give you some money back on that. And it's not in the best shape and I can't really proxy it and it's on a square base. And I was looking at a little bit at the Horror Ghast, Endless Spell. And then I was looking at the face of Nagash and I noticed that not only is it obviously, you know, the face of Nagash, but everything is almost completely identical, including the little, pieces of ribbon that are on the top of his helmet. They're even in the exact same, kind of direction that they're flowing in. So they literally just took the exact, maybe CAD sculpt for Nagash's face and then just like bent the tip of his helmet a little bit and then like called it an endless spell. So I have some spirit host bottoms, you know, the ones where it's like a skeleton coming out of the ground. It's like faces exploded with the ectoplasm coming out. I basically took that spirit host base and I have Nagash's head on top. So I got the Horror Ghast. I got a bunch of Chaos Knight stuff that I'm building up for 40K. A lot of conversions. So that's a lot of fun, actually. But not a lot of play is going to be had for that in a while. Our host, our co-host Matthew is going to be hopefully painting it up for me. I don't know. And that's it. This weekend I played against Jeremy round one at an event that we both drove 2-ish hours to get to, so that was fun. We had a laugh. It was Fire Slayers versus Nighthaunt, so I'll let you guys come to your own conclusions with that. But it was we played a game and dice were rolled.
Oh, come on, don't sell yourself short then.
No, to be quite frank, I have been out of practice and I played very poorly that game. And it was well noted that. So we are going to be getting some practice in, Jeremy and I. But, you know, Jeremy did win the event, as he mentioned. And congratulations, Jeremy, for clobbering everyone, including myself. Obviously played Nighthaunt on your first matchup, and this was at the Terracrux gaming location in kind of downtownish Tacoma, Washington. And, you know, as we've talked about before, Tacoma is or the Pacific Northwest, especially just Washington as a state, has been really consistent with Age of Sigmar events just this entire season. Can you tell me a little bit about how your event went, Jeremy?
Let me to tell you, the ride over is always be ready. I love driving through the Pacific Northwest. It's wonderful. We showed up in Tacoma right during their Pride Parade. So that was also an amazingly kind of delayed Pride Parade, but also kind of cool at the same time, having a bunch of inflows of the parade showing up in the store and just like checking out what's going on. Even there was a couple of Pride flags left on the tables after a couple rounds, basically. No, it was the event was great. Like, it's always good to see a lot of the folks, where we play like locally up in the Pacific Northwest. But also, I want to mention that the event was going to be TO'd by our kind of co-competitor / acquaintance / friend Chris Michelson. But unfortunately, he passed away about 2 weeks ago to a heart attack, and it was kind of like also a good moment to talk to his close teammates and friends who were there playing as well. But anyway, not to take it from a happy to darker mood, but I wanted to just give a shout out to Chris Michelson and and especially the team Victoria's Secret for doing everything they can, bringing terrain, organizing the event, and so forth. The event went very simply. I took a Fire Slayer list, and lately I've been thinking about, taking Arknot companies in the list to add like a couple more scoring units. But because they were not painted, I decided to take Auric Hearthguards to the event. And let me you know, explain to you how, you know, I mean, the reason I'm telling you this is because it comes crucial on game three for very clear, obvious reasons. So obviously, Auric Urgar's not as good as Arknight in shooting, but they do synergize better with the army and also overcome some of the bigger weakness of the Fire Slayers, which is that they can help mitigate some of the damage to your heroes with basically kind of a like a bodyguard look at Sir mechanic that they have. The first game I played was against Alex, you know, our lead host here. You know, he's been out of practice. He's been trying to enjoy his easy mode Legion army for the last like 2-3 months. So he all of a sudden had to make tactical decisions and not spend CP to respawn units. So it was a bit of a challenge for him. We played the new GHB mission where it's I think it is Scorched Earth. And one of the big reasons, like, I think the game was, you know, the mission was more designed for me winning because since it's a shorter deployment edge and I only have really two, I can only fight on like a, you know, with two kind of like one big Alpha Strike unit and then kind of one a secondary like kind of beat stick unit. So I can, on a Hammer and Anvil deployment, I can, with the little amount of models I have, I can screen out his Dreadblade Harrow mechanic very easily in my deployment zone, which meant like for most of the games, I actually didn't really, I moved forward enough to basically have a one turn rush to like his nearest objective. But I never really had to commit because I knew he didn't have enough to punch since he couldn't get behind me to really get victory points. He had to engage the front units. And I think one of the mistakes, Alex will talk more about what he feels are some of his mistakes. But like, you know, like I said, like the game, you know, if Alex had played a bit more cagey and like focused more on the weaker flank, not the big Hearthguard block, I think the game would have, you know, could have been up in the air. But Alex will say otherwise. He'll say Fire Slayers are too OP, which they are. But I think Nighthaunt is the best army in the Death faction to basically kind of like beat Fire Slayers on an objective game effectively. Second game I played after having quite a few drinks and reconciling salt and making myself a little bit of artisanal soap, I guess, in a sense. I played Gristlegore. Oh, my favorite army to play against. And this is by the way, this is pre-nerfed Gristlegore. They did get it did not include any of the point adjustment. It did not include the Savage Strike nerf. It did include the extra command point, so they can't just start with like 3 command points anymore unless they buy like 2 battalions and the extra 50. And then the point adjustment in the end of the spell. So it was nerfed a little bit, but it wasn't like the big like whammy nerf that they got like from the fact, because we already even played without the new fact, which, you know, it came out like less than 5 days from the event. And you know, my opponent had heard me talk about Fire Slayers, and I had either here in the podcast or in person, and decided he played very very defensively for a Gristlegore player, which was good for him. The problem is I got a double turn up on turn 2 because I got to make him go first, and then I chose to go and won the dice when went first, and it basically allowed me to catapult the giant 30-man Hearthguard block down his like left flank and like just like neuter most of his infantry and like lock up his non-general Terrorgeist and almost kill it had it not been for had it not been for like some good rolls on his part, but also mostly like his Terrorgeist was not killing things, but I wasn't killing it. So it was like, I guess, kind of fine. And then his counterattack, he threw every like both Terrorgeist in there and everything in that basically effectively 30-man Hearthguard unit. The general did maybe killed 6 models with both activation. Then I got to use the CP to strike before the other Terrorgeist did. And I almost killed, like, I mean, this was a game of like that turn was really weird in dice roll because I did something like 28 mortal wounds to that second Terrorgeist with only like 8 wounds left on it, and it survived a 4. At that point, it had like a rerollable 4-up save and a 6-up shrug and a 5-up shrug. And let me tell you, like, it tanked all of those mortal wounds. And then when his first active, that one, when it finally got to activate, did something like 52 wounds on his first activation. He rolled, he had fully buffed it. So it had like 6 or 7 attacks on its maw. And it did something like 30 mortal wounds. He rolled like 4, 5, 6s, if I forgot exactly, on that maw on that first activation. So by the end of the combat, he also, I should mention, his general Terrorgeist did die from my activation. So he had like 1 Terrorgeist left of 4 wounds, and I had 3 Hearthguard left out of the 30-man block. But, you know, they did exactly what they needed to do. They stuck around, and they locked up that Terrorgeist. And at that point, the game was like harder for him to come back from, because I had like I had taken a lead in points, and I had the center objective, and I still had the rest of my army, and all he had left was like his things he basically brought in from reinforcement. He didn't even get to summon from his general because it died before he got to summon using it, I believe. So it was just, yeah, the game kind of like wrapped up there. And you know, I explained to him like some tactical changes I would have made. Like he summoned like his crit flares like in the middle short edges to kind of like be like a secondary like backup unit. He also summoned his chalice like super far forward, even though he was going to play defensively. So it never actually mattered. Like I think the chalice only resummoned ghouls the entire, like maybe 8 ghouls the entire game. That's all I did. Even though like, it just went to waste effectively. And then the crit flare should have been summoned behind me and just trying to harass the poor like orc Hearthguards that were like kind of sitting on my backfield objective. So I think he learned a lot from that game and walked away, you know, now ready to play against Fire Slayers. But I don't think he's going to be playing Grisogor. I think he said like post-nerf, I think he's going to move on to something else, which is great for me because now it means I can find some nice Flesh Eater court for armies for cheap on eBay soon. and then finally, I ended up playing – I thought I was going to play the Changelos player that won Wetco's GT. But due to like, I guess, you know, points and so forth, I ended up playing Jack Ballard, pretty well-known guy up here in the Pacific Northwest. He plays mostly Stormcast, very specifically shooty Stormcast. And he brought like a very heavy Vanguard Raptor army. And to be honest, like it, like looking at it with Heldenheimer ability, I was thinking I'm probably going to lose that game just because he has enough firepower to like really in the first 2 turns probably snipe off all my characters. And then like it's real, the only advantage I had was relocation orb. So I had the like, you know, my entire strategy was like, well, I guess I'll just send my army down the middle and just sit on reload orb and hope I can keep making him go first every turn and just keep racking up 3 points a turn. And then maybe if I can do that for 3 turns, I win the game. Right.
Yeah.
What ended up happening is I think Jack underestimated the speed of dwarves. And on the first turn, he almost killed one of my heroes. He split fire instead of focusing on one hero, took one down to 1 wound and one down to 3 wounds. But then the Hearthguards like absorbed like 8, like I lost like 4 of them to that volley, but they effectively tanked it. And this is one of the reasons why I still think Hermdar, you know, after my event today, is still the best sub faction for Fire Slayers, because the -1 rune aura from the general plus the it really saved my bacon on those shots against the heroes. The fact that the Auric Earthguards were able to tank the half the wounds made it so that unfortunately Jack was not able to kill any of my heroes in the first volley, opening volley. And then he teleported some of his units in the backfield pocket that I left kind of open on purpose as like bait. I didn't think he was going to take it, but he did. And then my giant block of a Hearthguard basically did like a, like not really exactly a retreat move. They just wheeled and then like lined up and charged that and were able to like they charge up that huge block of shooters. Didn't kill them on the first round, but like locked them up and make sure they killed the Lord Aquilor that was with them, so they couldn't get away from the rest for once they were there. And then the other part of his 2 other shooting units from the Vanguard Raptors were, I mean, they were about 17 inches away from the other Hearthguard block, but they I got to go, you know, I got to get run and charge, and I got a +2 zeal, and I got to basically charge into them. But Jack had a good plan. He had the other wing that were able to like move in the assault charge phase and basically clip my Earth Guards before they got to declare a charge. but because of how he placed them, he only clipped like one of my Hearthguard models. And unfortunately, the way the Hearthguard block was stringed, it was that the ones at the end of the string were closer to his Vanguard Raptors. So they got to pile in and towards the Vanguard Raptors and while maintaining coherency and got at least two or three guys swinging into them. And it wasn't enough damage to really like kill them, but it killed maybe one or two, but they were basically still locked in combat with them at the end of the round. So unfortunately, like for Jack, like he basically decided the game after the first two turns because he never got to shoot out of shooting Hearthguards for the rest of the game, unfortunately. And and relocation orb made it so that he, by me going second the first turn and then him going first the second turn, he was unable to basically recuperate from that point. So that was my Terracrux event. What do you think, John?
Oh, I was just thinking, man, sounds like a great game you guys played. You know, Jack is a real cool guy. You know, when I came up to Portland there, I got to play against him and his Stormcast as well. And not ironically, we also played the relocation orb mission where I did win it by going being able to take bottom of turn every round and get that 3 points. So sounds like you had to go about it the hard way, so to speak.
If it wasn't for his like kind of like faux pas and like not maximizing his range of his shooting units, I thought it was going to be hard from the get go. But I really wanted to play against the change host list at the event. I wanted to see what it was like, basically having all my heroes nuked to have mortal wounds for once, like, you know, bring back PTSD from when I used to play Iron Jaws. detract from Terracrux, and I want to get on my pedestal, but the fact that Games Workshop did not nerf or adjust Hearthguard points really like makes me think like they're not playtesting as much as they should be. But you know, to my advantage, it just means that every Hedonite player that's doing so well right now in the ITC has no idea how to play against Fire Slayers, and I'm looking forward to ruining their dreams at every event I'm going to run into them. So
yeah, but you see, the problem though is in the meantime you're going to ruin everyone else's events, like mine.
Oh, I'm sorry, Alex. Well, next time you should, you know, practice Night Haunt. You know,
hey Alex, get good scrub.
Get good scrub. Makes sense.
Yeah, it's okay, Jeremy. You could self-impose a little bit of points increase, and you know, just decide maybe that each year unit should cost 20 points more, and build a list appropriately.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of want to actually do that playtest, see what it would be like if Hearthguards were 140 for 5, and then maybe drop Volkites down either 10 or 20 points and just see what it would look like, just because I think Volkites are overpriced. I'm kind of curious like how much different the army would play of that point adjustment.
I actually did that because I was definitely anticipating the Abhorrent Archregent point increase, and so I was actually playing 70 points down when I was building my death list, and I basically just always got a triumph. But then, you know, the point increase came up, was like, oh, Garrett, your opponent went up. I'm like, yeah, I actually had like planned for like a 50 point bump.
It's really so smart.
It's not an awful way to play, and I honestly think that I'm actually kind of glad that Fire Slayers and Slaanesh weren't touched in this last FAQ. But that's under the hope that in the next like 2 months they'll get touched with another FAQ. Hopefully Games Workshop realized that this rapid pace of books coming out was a mistake and they need to just go back and like correct some mistakes, because they did that with Skaven and Flesh Eater Courts. Clearly fix them. Gits, they dropped some points around. Like they came back like, hey guys, we know this book just came out, but we fixed it. Fire Slayers and Slaanesh came out so close to the FAQ that honestly, if they were going to do points adjustments in that FAQ, it would have been rushed again. And they may have swung too hard in the bad or not strong enough, and then we'd be stuck with it. So I think by not doing the point adjustments then, maybe we'll get to see one soon, or we just got to wait till the next big FAQ and hopefully they'll do it there. So yeah. 6 months worst time.
Well, I really like what you're saying there, Garrett. The idea that they're taking a little more conservative approach instead of taking the rudder, you know, from one stock to the other and swinging the ship all over, kind of steady as she goes, small adjustment, small adjustment, small adjustment, until the game is right on course. So hopefully that is what we're seeing here.
I mean, that's exactly how this entire General's Handbook was done. Like, I think when I first saw this General's Handbook, I was honestly surprised by how little they changed things. But then after I did some time digesting the book, I really liked it because they just did a bunch of subtle boosts, bumps in points that hurt spam. Like, Plague Mumps only went up 10 points. But when you're taking 200 of them, that's a 200 point bump to your army.
Yeah.
So it's like they did things like that where they just did these tiny like 10 point bumps. But those 10-point bumps add up to like 100 points to people who are spamming that one unit. So they encourage unit diversity by being like, well, maybe you can take this unit that we just went down by 10 points to make up for that 10 points you bumped up. You just got to swap, do some swaps here or there. So they're doing a lot more subtle changes that I think it means like the really powerful books like Flesh Eater Courts and Skaven, they got a nerf, but it wasn't like the nerf bat slammed them in the face and they just got completely obliterated and are no longer a strong faction. They're still very powerful factions with these adjustments, but they're toned down just enough that you can't spam the best thing and win.
Yeah. I mean, so, Flesh Eater Court, still a very good book. I will say, though, that I feel like it's the – I think it's one of the few times we're going to see an army get like really like – hit the nerf bat in General Handbook because I felt between the CP change plus the point change plus the Savage Strike change, I don't think I've ever seen a single faction or sub faction get hit so hard with the nerf bat before.
I mean, we've seen bigger ones. I think. I mean, there's been some crazy stuff in the past, like you know the Morgul.
Yeah,
I don't want to talk about it.
It was appropriate.
I will echo everything you said, Garrett, but I don't necessarily think Slaanesh needs a point adjustment. I just think they just need a summoning adjustment. That's really all they need.
Yes, I agree there. Yeah. But adjustments, that's why I like that they didn't just react with the Slaanesh update and, you know, bump keepers up to 400 points and demonettes at 150. Like if they just went, they just reacted and increased the points of the list, I'm like, well, that would break Slaanesh. Slaanesh would be completely worthless if their points went up. Like they're actually a really expensive army. The problem with Slaanesh is their summoning is too cheap. So I think if they actually take their time and like do the math and balance things out, then the FAQ will come out. They'll like, you know, bump the epitome by a little bit. Maybe keepers will go up to 370 and then they'll jump the table. So I think that I hope that they actually come out with one in 2 months and they take their time and they do it right rather than do it reactionary and rapid fire like they've done with the battle tomes.
Yeah.
So.
I agree entirely on that one. Now
it is really I'm really curious to see how they do address this, because if they do, then this is going to be something that is going to be different than how things have normally been, both for games for just Games Workshop games as a whole, not just Age of Sigmar. So being able to see, you know, points adjustments that are not just, you know, the General's Handbook or the big FAQ would, what I think it would take a lot of precedence. Garrett, it looks like you might have some additional thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, as you were just hinting at, it's like between the 40K big FAQ that came in April and then this big FAQ, they show that they're willing to make changes in FAQs outside of books and go towards this kind of like digital living rule book that they've always promised us for these last couple of years. And I think like now, like when they had the survey, one of the questions was how often do you want things to be changed, and one of the things in there was every 6 months. And now that we have two big FAQs a year and they show that they're willing to make massive war scroll changes, point increases, they're willing to go through and actually do what a General's Handbook normally do in these things, then honestly, if there's something that's massively abusive, we only got to wait 6 months before it'll be fixed. And I think that's actually really positive for the game. Because like I only have to deal with this Slaanesh Firestar bullshit until end of December. And then I'm looking at LVO and I'm like, well, LVO, everything's going to be fixed because they got the big FAQ in December that they'll be able to fix these things.
God, I hope so. Even if it nerfs Fire Slayers, I hope so.
I do have to appreciate and make our listeners aware of the fact that, you know, Jeremy does have these incredibly powerful armies, and Fire Slayers, though, you know, they are not very common right now, are just one of those armies that can just completely take almost any hit in the game, and you will not be able to take their strike back more often than not. I like how he's like, I know it's really strong, I know it should be toned down, but I'm going to continue to use it as like punishment to be like, see Games Workshop, this is what happens when you don't like pay attention.
I'm not that glamorous. No, I just,
you're not glamorous. You're French.
No, it's what, that's why, like, you know, when at John's event, I challenged Michael Birch's right out of the gate, because I was just like, you know what, I brought a top tier list, I'm gonna play a top tier list as well right out of the gate, and also a top tier player, so might as well, you know, like, I like to even add the playing field as quickly as I can. It also takes, you know, it's also nice for me that I'm also bringing the one army where Gristlegore was like, yeah, I don't really want to fight this. Yeah, no, it's just, no, don't make me some kind of white knight or black knight or whatever you want to call me. I'm not that kind of guy. I just know what's, you know, what's good and what's bad. And I just want Games Workshop to hire me full time as a consultant. here's my credential, boys.
We'll be play testers.
No, but I don't know.
I did want to comment on Alex's point about Jeremy taking this thing to show Games Workshop that it's like powerful. I really hope that the community at large can shift from this idea of being mad at the players for taking powerful stuff, and instead recognizing that like it's not Jeremy's fault that Fire Slayers are good. Like, why? Like, don't blame Jeremy for playing the best stuff. Like, we all want to do that. We all want to win. It, like, so you can't be mad at Jeremy for using really good things. Like, we, a local out here, Dutch Adams, he's run into a lot of issues because he's playing Slaanesh and he's destroying everybody with it. And some people get frustrated. It's like, it's not Dutch's fault that he has a really powerful book, and he recognizes that the book is really powerful and that it's absurd and he wants to be nerfed. But it's like, why would he not take the best stuff when he's going to a tournament where you're supposed to win? Yeah. Like, why penalize yourself? There's no reason to.
I will say, though, in addition, that I do not plan on not playing Fire Slayers after they get nerfed. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, and I think that's a, you know, I don't know about Adam, Dutch himself, but, and it's a key takeaway, I think, from a lot of players, because I do see that in some of the Flesh Eater Court players. It's like, now that the book came out and the nerfs came, and they're like, oh, well, I'm going to go move on to something else, which is fine. You should play whatever you want, but like, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not I play.
Well, are you a true blood? Is what you're asking, right? You know? Yeah. That's what it comes down to. I play it for the fluff. I play it for the love of the army, right?
I played Fire Slayers at the last LVO before they got the book update, and I played them for like 3 months before LVO, and I'm still gonna keep playing them after the nerf because there's something about short, stunty dwarf that wear no armor that like just appeals to my I don't know, inner demons, I guess.
Yes, naked buff men, you like, we get it.
I love that too, but I also just want to recognize, I think we have this thing where people like, I need to play, like people get married to an army, like I love Fire Slayers and I'm a Fire Slayer army, I'll always play it no matter how good or bad they are. But it's like, the other people who are like, they played Gristlegore because it was really powerful and then it's nerfed and so they jumped in the next one. I want to try to remove the stigma of those players because it's that's how they have fun and that's their way of playing. And so go for it. Like, as you said, like, you know, do what you want. And it's that's fine that you want to play Fire Slayers, but I hope the community can just accept that some people want to just keep playing the best thing. And it's honestly not a bad way to play. Like, yeah, you're going to see it. It is what it is. But don't blame them for wanting to play the powerful stuff.
No,
they want to win.
I just don't want to hear them on the internet bitching about, like, their nerf. Like,
and let's face it, people who jump armies and switch lists and do all that stuff, they're the ones who keep your local store open.
Yeah.
The guy who buys one army and then plays it for the next 30 years straight, maybe buys a model or paint here and there, that's not keeping the lights on at that local store.
So you're saying I'm a patron.
You're a patron. Exactly. A patron and a loyalist. You said you were going to stay with the dwarves no matter what. It's like me, you know, now that Skaven have been completely nerfed, hey, I'm still going to play them. You know, it's painful playing such a nerfed and an army that really is on its back foot and just doesn't have any strength left in it. But I'll do what I can with it.
Oh, I'm glad, John. I'm glad.
go to hell.
You know, I'll be honest with you. After the points change, I've been building lists. I don't even notice the difference in my lists. I might have been playing my lists under points before because I don't know where the difference is.
It's probably because you dropped the vortex.
Oh, yes, it is. I did. I dropped the stupid vortex because it's worthless now. That's where my extra 100 points came from.
When you sniff enough warp dust, you just start writing numbers down, you know, and you come to your own conclusions.
or absinthe, as the case may be this evening, I assure you.
I mean, it is green, so.
There we go.
Very warping.
There we go.
It's liquid warp dust.
Yeah. Now, you know, Terracrux, you know, that was a good event, and they have a lot of really fun things going on. Just, again, between Terracrux and Blue Sky Hobbies, a lot of the Victoria's Secret people, they always run real great events, real fun people. And, you know, just to reiterate what Jeremy mentioned a little earlier, you know, our condolences do go out to the entire team and the family of Chris Michelson. So he was a great guy. And he beat me at Riptide GT. That was my last time I interacted with him, but he will be sorely missed. There are a few other events that we do want to touch base on here. One of them was a big one. The ATC happened. The ATC is in Chattanooga, Tennessee, so it's a little while out there. Jeremy and I were actually going to, and our co-host Matthew and I believe John for a moment, but then our friend James, we're all going to try to do an ATC team. But unfortunately, you know, as plans sometimes do, they fell through. There was at least 24 players. There were six teams here. And there's a lot to go over with this, besides even the goofy and the funny names. John, were you able to take a close look at the ATC event for Age of Sigmar?
You know, I honestly was not able to take as close a look at it this weekend as I'd like. You know, my buddy Joe Cryer was out there TOing, judging the events. And so I was kind of following his commentary and some of the stuff that he had to say. But that was about it.
Okay.
Well, for our audience who doesn't know what the ATC format is like, it's a team-based event where basically there is a captain of each team, and each round the captain basically turn by turn, I think it's a coin flip, we get to decide first, decides who, you know, the matchups, like, so a captain will bring forward a list, the other captain will basically assign a matchup, and then that captain will bring up a list, and then the first captain will then match up. So it's kind of a, and it's the round is decided by the performance of all the games, not just like you know, I think it's most of the time it ends up becoming, since it's is it a 5-player team or is it a 6-player team?
Four.
So it's usually four. Yeah. So it's going to come down to basically points and secondaries for two wins on each side effectively. It's the only real, you know, real team GT experience I think we have in AOS for, you know, in the United States. Like, we have doubles tournaments, but I don't, this is, and we have, I guess, in a certain extent, Adepticon, but I don't think Adepticon does it for AOS, do they?
They are going to next year. They announced this Adepticon that they're planning on moving forward to start doing a team tournament, but it's similar. It might be similar to the Adepticon 40K team tournament, which is like two doubles games. So that's a whole other thing.
Yeah. And, wow. As John mentioned, Joe Cryer of Team America basically TO'd, and also of previous ITC fame, TO'd the event, and we had some, you know, some. It's going to be interesting because you can't look at a list in a vacuum, because teams are designing army lists and picking armies that are for. Well, firstly, the team has to be, each player has to be only one Grand Legions. And then secondly, they're trying to build a list which are kind of like supposed to plug holes, like for the match, you know, take advantage of the matchup system, right? So if the first captain basically, you know, if you have a purely defensive army that's not supposed to yield like points, but not necessarily aggressive enough to win games, you want to be paired against like a more aggressive army, right? Which is, you're trying to, at that point, your job is to not necessarily win, but it is to deny your opponent the ability to win by a large difference effectively. So that was my spiel about ATC. And it is how ETC gets run as well. So keep a lookout for Team America playing against Team England round one. Is it like 4 weeks or 6 weeks now?
Something like that. I think it's like 4 weeks from now.
Yeah.
They already put the pairings up. That was kind of cool.
Yeah. I just like that we're playing the colonizers on first round, and it's also probably the best. It's like the best team out of the right of the gate. Let's do it. Let's do it.
USA. USA.
Now, real quick,
does France have a team?
Jeremy? Sorry, what was that? I didn't hear your question.
Does France have a team?
Does it matter? I'm never going to play on Team France anyway.
Wow. Right on.
I might be called a French overlord. Doesn't mean I want to play for France. Sorry. Well, Alex, would you like to say something, my good sir?
Well, you know, in terms of the ATC2, I really do enjoy that format. You know, years ago, there was the RTT on Sundays for LVO was a team tournament in a similar fashion, and I had a blast playing that event. The event's winners, you know, because there were only six teams, and just like Jeremy mentioned, you could only have only one player. You couldn't double up on your Grand Alliance. So for all four players, one was a Destruction Army, one was an Order Army, one was a Chaos Army, and one was a Death Army. You know, between the six, there were for Death, there were two Grand Hosts, one Night Haunt, and it looks like that was three Flesh Eater Courts. For Chaos, there was Disciples of Tzeentch, Skaven, Blades of Khorne, Hedonites, and another Blades of Khorne army. For Order, it was a split between Seraphon, Eidoneth Deepkin, two Stormcast armies, and Seraphon armies, and a random Grand Alliance army, as well as the Destruction armies, which were just a lot of Gloomspite Gits and one Iron Jaws army. So it was an interesting spread, you know, not to really dive into the actual lists themselves. You know, Grand Alliance, or my apologies, Grain Alliance Alcohol. Grain Alliance Alcohol won the team event there. So, it is between Zach, Brendan, Jacob, and Carson, they kicked a lot of butt. So congratulations on them.
Yeah. Good job, guys. Way to defeat all those corn-fed and potato starch teams, I guess.
There you go. So, yeah, it looked like a real fun blast. So I'm a little envious here. However, there was
Garrett, let me ask you a small question. Sorry to interrupt there, Alex. Hey, did you have to do anything special to set things up to support ATC with BCP, or is that just a ready function that's ready to go if someone wants to run their own team tournaments?
Well, actually, we're working with ATC since January to make sure that our current software works with the ATC style of events. So now when you run a team tournament, you build your team, and then the team captains set up the individual player pairings, and then the players can submit their scores individually for themselves. And then the team captains will submit the team score, which will then auto-calculate your team scores based off of the individual pairing. So it's actually, you can set it up as is right now.
Wow, that's really nice, because I was looking here, and it, like, when I look at the listings, it shows each team, who is in the team, the lists of all the players. This is a really nice setup you have.
Thank you.
Yeah, maybe TO's out there, and I'll run another, you know, ATC-like event. It'd be nice. We need a practice for the ETC crowd, boys.
Yeah, I mean, I love this style of event ever since I heard about it. I've never been a fan of doubles. Every time I try it, I'm always kind of feel like it either becomes a 2v1 game or just 2 1v1 games. And I'm just not a huge fan of doubles, but I love this format because you get to play that mind game of how to pair the people up against each other. And then you get to play a single game. And I love that whole concept. And I've never been able to play in one of these, and I've always wanted to. So I unfortunately had a wedding this weekend, so I was planning on going except for my, you know, good friend's wedding that I had to be a groomsman in.
You know, it really is a fun style of play. And like I said before, you know, I played in an event once like that, and I just wish to play in another one again. So they're real fun. And even if you're getting a matchup that's a little harder, say the your team captain ended up going second, you know, you still have a lot of variety, a lot of chances to make things go well for you. And it's not always a super hard matchup. It's It comes down to just how well you can play as an individual. I like doubles. I mean, me and our 40K co-host Michael Schwartz, we consistently have done well with Team Pleasure Pirates. We got we won the LVO doubles for 2019. Team Pleasure Pirates was a blast. However, it consisted of and me and our good friend Paul, we do the same thing when we're in doubles. So maybe I'm the common denominator here. We end up getting into arguments. So it's not so much about 2v1 or 2v2.
Two Christmases.
Yeah. My team with Paul was two Christmases because we made the our opponents feel like we were going to go through a split and they might have to go through two Christmases. Pleasure Pirates, it was Michael Schwartz just assuming that I knew Spanish, or at least I knew Spanish as well as he did. So he kept on speaking Spanish to me to have like a secret code for strategy and tactics. And every time I had to just tap him on the shoulder.
Explain to the audience what Michael Schwartz looks like first, because Michael Schwartz is a very tall white guy. And
Michael Schwartz is a beautiful man.
I didn't say he was not. I'm just saying, like, it's just fun. You gotta set up the image for them. Very tall, handsome white guy, basically talking to you in Spanish, and you, Alex Gonzalez, just like, I have no idea what you're speaking to me. I can pick up like one or two words, and you're just nodding your head in agreement because you don't want to give away your game to your opponents. Like,
totally. For our listeners out there, Michael Schwartz, yeah, he's beautiful inside and out. He's 6'20". Eight? He's 6'20". He is basically a professional rower. He's very strong, very smart. He knows French and Spanish and English, and I'm sure like 12 other languages.
I think six.
Six. That makes sense. He is just a great guy. Just a really great guy. So,
and he's my banker.
And he's a banker. Yeah. And he's a banker.
He's my banker too.
There we go. So he's a great guy. But, you know, he's a Hedonite player. So we try to give him as much grief as we can, though. But, you know, it happens. It happens.
Everybody has a dark side.
Everyone does have a dark side, yes. So and it's not the fact that he's a banker. It's the fact that he's a Hedonite player. It's all about that gold, that gold, and we know you really like that. You know, he was playing the most recent battle tome for some time. However, we did get previews that there is going to be a new battle tome just right around the corner. And, you know, for the most part, it's been a couple of months since we've almost known the entirety of that new battle tome. And that is going to be the Sylvaneth book that has been delayed for various international reasons. But we did want to focus on a unit within the battle tome to have our unit spotlight for today. That is going to be the Kurnoth Hunter unit. Now, Kurnoth Hunters are a little bit new in this new battle tome for Sylvaneth that does come out technically this upcoming Saturday. So just about a day or two from when you guys are listening to this recording today. One of the big takeaways is that it's not just one war scroll. It's actually three different war scrolls, depending on which one of the three options you're going to choose for your Kurnoth Hunter unit. John, were you able to take a peek at the war scroll in particular, or war scrolls, and what did stand out to you?
Sure. So I'll tell you what, the Kurnoth Hunters are a unit that has given me the bad touch more than once. What can I say? I play against our buddy Vlad Nika, an amazing Sylvaneth player locally. And whether I win or lose, he always does bad things to me. And it's funny, despite taking a punishment from these units again and again, I really have never, I guess, paid attention to the war scrolls. You know, I'm very used to the idea that there's a shooty version and a melee version. And I now see that there's actually two different melee versions to choose from. And it's your typical kind of split. You know, you got one that has more attacks. You have one that has a higher rend. One that has a consistent damage. One that has a little more damage, possibly with the D3. And then, of course, there's a shooty version that has okay melee. But I tell you what, there's some abilities on this war scroll that I've never noticed before. And you guys can correct me if these were are new abilities or if these have always been there.
They're not. Looking here,
they have not. I'm looking at this Envoys of the Everqueen, and it says if a friendly Sylvaneth hero uses this command uses a command ability, friendly Sylvaneth units wholly within 12 inches of this unit are treated as being in range of that command ability.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, a 12 inch boost to command ability range? I can't imagine that nobody has ever used this across the table for me. I've never seen this ability, but that sounds really strong.
It's actually
I don't know. What do you think, Garrett?
It's actually more than a 12 inch boost because they count as the origin of the command ability 12 inches from them. So they can be across the table from the person using the command ability, and you measure from the Kurnoth hunters for range.
Wait, they don't have to be within range of the hero then?
No, they don't.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well that is even stronger than I thought it was. That's amazing. I can't believe I've never seen it.
Yeah, no, and honestly, like with the new Ark Revenant, I was noticing like right away, I'm like, wait a minute. They basically, you unlimited range can give Kurnoth hunters plus one attack for a command point because they're always in range of themselves.
Yep.
So you just give them a plus one attack from their, as long as you have an Ark Revenant alive.
Correct. Yeah.
It's
going to come into play with the new Grove command abilities or all the Sylvaneth sub-factions because for the most part, outside of the Ark Revenant, there isn't that many command abilities, like, you know, really benefiting like A, Kurnoth hunters, and then B, also like the other units effectively. But it's going to come down to the groves what the command abilities are for them for the buffs. Because the only other option, John, for you are Ark Revenant plus one attack for Kurnoth, B, Tree Lord Ancient giving you a reroll one save aura, which, by the way, Kurnoth hunters get reroll saves anyway.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's really the only other, the only two. Alero has one, but I don't think it's consent. It doesn't have, it's reroll ones to wounds, I think, if I remember correctly, for Sylvaneth units. So, like, they're.
Well, you have those new command abilities that are the reroll hits of one, wounds of ones, and.
No wounds of ones. There's no command ability that gives you reroll ones.
Oh, no. Saves of one, right?
Yeah, saves. Yeah, saves.
It's shooting saves. Yeah, so again, even those alone would be nice across the board.
Yeah, that is true. I don't know. I just, yes, Envoy of the Everqueen has been around since the Blast Tome, has not changed in wording. But please go on.
I think it changed in wording a little bit just to make it more clear. But it's acts how it should have always acted, and so I don't think anyone's played it differently. But yeah,
it's a really great ability here. You know, there are a few different weapon options involved, and just like John said, they are going to be a mix between the bow, the scythe, and the sword. Now, Garrett, what were your thoughts on some of the new combos? If you looked through some of those previous leaks with the Sylvaneth Battle Tome, were you able to take a look at any combos that you think might be useful?
Well, I've actually been studying this book quite closely because I'm starting a Sylvaneth army because of the new book that I saw when the leak was dropped, and I've been really building a lot of Sylvaneth lists.
Smart man.
So one of the obvious combos that I'm kind of leaning towards just because it sounds fun and also the paint scheme that my friend is painting towards is Winterleaf plus the Greatsword Hunters. Because Winterleaf gets an additional hit on sixes, and since the Greatswords have the extra attacks over the scythes, they're going to generate a bunch more hits versus them. And then plus the Ark Revenant giving a plus one to hit at unlimited range. You just grab three hunters and you can... Yeah, plus one attack, my bad. So you grab... if you with just three sword hunters and plus one attack, they can easily pump around out an average of like 10 to 12 wounds on Winterleaf. It can be really devastating for just 200 points and three hunters.
Yeah.
So that's one combo I was looking at. And then another one I was looking at was with Gnarlroot Wargrove.
Mm-hmm.
You can all your wizards give out a reroll once to hit naturally. And so Drycha, a very combat heavy wizard, can go up with your Kurnoth hunters and give them the reroll ones.
And melee and shooting too, remember.
Yeah, and melee and shooting. So then you can have a like a branch wraith who's going to be summoning dryads all game anyway, sit in the back and buff your Kurnoth hunters with bows. And so you don't need an Arc Revenant anymore, because one of the other benefits of the Arc Revenant is he gives Kurnoth hunters reroll ones to hit in a bubble. So you don't need him anymore. You lose the plus one attack, but it's all right. And with Gnarl Root, you just basically have your wizards be little mini Arc Revenants to all your hunters, which can be great.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. And I think that might be the combo that you and I were talking about, Jeremy, yesterday. Is that right?
A little bit. We were talking about Winterleaf and Nine Scythe hunters, and then we were also that somebody at Terracrux was talking about, which I think is not a bad option. But I was talking more about the Heartwood Grove with the relic that they have, which is an aura relic that gives all Kurnoth hunter reroll all hits, not just ones. Which is, I think, pretty good. The rest of the Wargrove is May, but that's a pretty powerful one if you plan on building a mostly, lots of Kurnoth hunter list. But I think we forgot to mention something crucial about the swords. The swords do mortal wounds on sixes to wound. So
that's right.
Yeah. So in terms of consistency, the swords are probably your go-to. Scythes are interesting in large blocks because they can swing over each other. Because unfortunately, you know, math says that a 50 mil base is less than 2 inches. So technically, you can two rank scythe Kurnoth hunters, on all technicalities, I guess. We also didn't touch on like one of the key reasons to why Games Workshop split the Kurnoth hunter war score into three, which is that for balancing mechanic, they can choose to change the points of each individual weapon options as they see fit for future point adjustments, which was a challenge before because when the Kurnoth hunters came out, I think they were only 160 or 180 points for three. Really, it was just really to address the shooting Kurnoth hunters, which were really prevalent back then. But then when you nerf, you had to nerf all three. You couldn't just nerf like one weapon option effectively. So it was a very good. I hope Games Workshop follows that logic for some of other units with like weapon options. There's a lot of that in Destruction, where like especially Iron
Calls. Oh yeah.
The Kurnoth hunter are a great unit. Like they have to be. I mean, they are the staple of Sylvaneth just because of their ability to tank. The 5-wound models of 4-up save and reroll save if they choose to, with some mortal wound mechanics before the swords even, because they do all, each Kurnoth hunter does has a 50-50 chance of doing a mortal wound at the end of combat. So they're just all around solid, solid, solid unit. So I think you'll probably see a lot of probably Gnarl Root list with like 18 Kurnoth hunters going around, maybe even more, just because you want to cheap casters that can summon with a bunch of reroll ones. So yeah, sorry, I don't want to go in a monologue about how good that unit is, but to be honest, and this is an unpopular opinion, I think, but that's pretty much the only good unit in that book. And that's my take on it. But
I mean, there are other units in the book. Like, hey, I love Drycha, but I think she got fantastically better with her extra Ren 2 and her new ways of using the things. But Drycha then actually buffs Spite Revenants a lot. If you want, I mean, I could talk a lot about all the other units that I've actually become really enthralled with in the Sylvaneth book. I think they actually have a lot of options, but Kurnoth hunters are like your bread and butter for sure.
Yeah, it's a staple, right? You're gonna have that in every list, every army. How many am I going to take in my list? Minimum.
Six. Yeah, I think that's the minimum. Yeah,
six. So, like, I think I have either two units of three bows or two units of three swords or one unit of six sides.
So here's the question then. Oh, so sorry. Go on.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say the scythes, basically, you need to take in greater than units of three or else the swords just win out because you can always get three guys in range. And then the one problem I see with that, though, is that Kurnoth hunters, unfortunately, only have bravery 7. So you get into real trouble with 5-wound models with bravery 7 when you have more than 3 dudes. So that's why I think swords will probably be seeing – swords and bows you'll probably be seeing the most of. What were you saying, Alex?
I was going to say, does this make Ilaria a little bit more of a must-take since she has the ability to summon some Kurnoth hunters for free?
No.
No. no. Because, I mean, basically, she's just a 460-point hero.
Yeah.
So you just, that's how you think of Alariel. She's not 660. She's 460 because she comes with three Kurnoff.
And hunters. In most games,
you're... That's just how you think about her.
Yeah, most games, she's not even summoning Kurnoff. I think she's going to be summoning 30 Dryads.
20, oh, dryads, 20 Dryads, which is why you'll still summon the Kurnoff Hunters, because three Kurnoff Hunters are going to do better than 20 Dryads, unless you need the bodies.
Yeah.
So it's like, probably not, because she's 460 and she's still, I think she's good, but I don't think she's a must take. She's all right. She's decent.
So she's still in the same avenue as Marathi, where it's like, you can take her if you want, but she's not all that.
I mean,
you
know.
She's not optimized. She's not the optimal choice, in my opinion. She's still good. You can probably build a list around her. I have a friend out here who's going to build, he's doing a massive conversion where he's not going to have the beetle. Instead, he's going to create this entire like summoning of a forest or whatever. And he's building a Harley Quinn Ivy combo where Dryche is going to be painted like Harley Quinn. And, Alario is going to be painted like Poison Ivy. So he's going to, cause he has this whole DC universe. He's got Aquaman as a, Eidolon and stuff. So he's going to do that. It's going to be great, but he's definitely taking Alario cause he wants to, and he's building lists around here. That's going to work out well, I think.
Awesome. Well, you know, I'm really excited to see what the new Sylvaneth book really entails. I'll be honest, I read through a very minimal amount of it. I think I got the leaks on Sunday morning at Bay Area Open. So I was sleep deprived by our good friend. And I was just I had a lot of drinks the night before. So I think I saw the link in our chat and just went, oh, Wildwoods look different, and like tried to go back to sleep and went like, oh, cool. Oh boy. Are there any other final thoughts on Kurnoth Hunters here? If there's someone who is trying to get better at the game and we want to give them just a small piece of advice that are, you know, since they're starting a Sylvaneth army, what would we say to them about Kurnoth Hunters? John, let's start with you.
Well, it sounds like the de jure is you're going to need at least six, so buy 12 when you buy your army.
Buy 18, six of each.
I was going to recommend you learn to magnetize.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to learn drills and magnets.
My comments would be learn how to deal with movement, because they are only a 5 movement unit. That can, with only a 4+ save, so they can be punished. So either take advantage of your teleporting through the woods, look at getting the hive for +3 inches of move, +3 inches to charge. Try to find ways to use their movement correctly, or you will be punished severely if you just kind of run them off the board and expect to do well.
Yeah, there's a battalion.
Because they only get the reroll saves. They only get the reroll saves in the combat phase, so they can be shot off easily.
There is a battalion that lets them get better movement, but it's pretty expensive.
Yeah.
Great. Well, it sounds like we're in a consensus. They are a really great unit, and they're going to be a perfect addition to any new Sylvaneth army moving forward. Are there any events that are upcoming in all of our areas? Let's start off with Garrett. Are there any events that you'd like to promote in the East Coast area?
Yes. The Basement War Gamers Summer Slaughter, and I believe it's Gamers Haven in Phoenixville. They have 5 spots open for a 32-man event. It's going to be a blast. They seem like a great group of guys. I met most of them at Triumph. Really excited for that. It is in 2 weeks, the 27th, 28th of July. So, yeah, get your tickets. Get out there. It's going to be fun.
Okay, how about you, John? Is there anything going on in the Bay Area?
Absolutely. Well, you know, we got the Castle Conflagration 19 coming up Sunday, August 18th, day before my birthday. It's going to be a great, fun tournament. Going to have some special fun stuff for that day. And, of course, later this month, for those of you that like to roll a little sci-fi dice, we have the GK Open on the 27th, 28th at Gamecastle Mountain View. It's going to be a GT. We've got some crazy great prizes set up. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hope to see you guys there.
Perfect. So there's going to be a 40K grand tournament in the Bay Area. That sounds like a blast. Wish I could make it.
Yeah, I tell you, our good friend Casey Pirate Pete printed up some a 3D bolter and a 3D plasma pistol to give away as a prize support. I took that plasma pistol and lit the heck out of it, so it should be pretty cool. Somebody's going to win that and go away with some pretty cool prizes.
Great. Yeah. And we would love to see that. So hopefully the winner is going to be very excited. The Pacific Northwest, we do have a couple of or a few events that are coming up just right around the corner, you know, the same weekend as the event that Garrett had mentioned just a moment ago. At the Gamers Haven location, there's going to be an event at the Gamers Haven location on the West Coast. There's going to be an event called the Forge of Souls. It is going to be a GT in Spokane, Washington at, you guessed it, Gamers Haven. It's going to be a great time. You know, I am possibly going to be there. Jeremy is definitely going to be there to give me a bad time. Matthew is going to be there, our good friend Kyle. There's going to be good people, good times. And, you know, the Black Pearl, which is an infamous bar right in the same shopping center, will always be a good time.
I'll make sure you guys get paragraph one.
Are you sure it's in the same location? I thought maybe they moved to the new location, maybe not anymore.
I do believe that they actually did expand. They expanded in that little alleyway area. They got the place next to it.
Got it, cool.
Yeah, so they're in the same center. And then just the weekend after that, we are going to have T-Shift Open in Bellevue, Washington. Also, you know, that's just a
it got renamed to Cascadia Open, formerly known as T-Shift Open.
I do believe that Ben said that this is the last year it's being called T-Shift because everywhere on the website and on BCP, it all says T-Shift. But yes, they are going to change the name. What are they going to change?
Well, the website is Cascadia Open now. So if you type in T-Shift Open, it's going to take you to Cascadia Open. But yeah, it's T-Shift used to stand for the Seattle Hearts of Fire tournament. Hearts and Fire, I think, tournament. It's being graduated to Cascadia Open because now it's not just Seattle. Yeah, and it's going to be in Seattle. So, well, it's going to be in Bellevue, I think, actually. Bellevue, I believe, next to Seattle.
Yeah, it's going to be in the Red Line in Bellevue, Washington. It's going to be a really good time. It's going to be a bit of a drive for us, but we're going to have fun either way. 2 weekends from then, in mid-August, we are going to have the Ordo Fanaticus Contest of Champions, which is also going to be a GT for Age of Sigmar. All of these events are ITC events, by the way. That is going to be in Vancouver, Washington, just a stone's throw from Portland instead. And, of course, we do have Nova just a couple of weeks after that. So, Garrett, do you have any final thoughts here?
I did want to give a shout out to WarGamesCon in Austin, Texas, which I will be attending. It is 2 weeks before Nova on the 17th and 18th of August in mid-August. They are going to be an ITC major event. They have, I believe, over 80 players signed up now. So that's going to be a blast. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's going to be very exciting. So I hope to see you guys all at all of these events. In the meantime, you know, do, again, rate us and like us on Facebook and Apple Podcasts or Podbean or wherever you get your podcasts. This is Alex, John, Jeremy, and Garrett signing off for tonight. You guys have a great week.
Night, folks.
Good night. Night.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all the time. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.